Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta
cut you down. Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide and live on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. You're going right to the front lines of history in the making, and there's a lot of it being made. There's a lot of it being made right now. Start with the E. Jean Carroll case. The lawyers did their summations, their closing arguments this morning. The jury is deliberating right now. E. Jean Carroll's lawyer asked for $24 million and more in punitive damages. And the idea is, how do you get the guy to stop continuing to harass her, threaten her, and lie about her? In other words, the first time he got nailed for $5 million. $5 million is not chump change. It doesn't begin to repair what he did to her or her reputation, but okay, it's something. It's not chump change. Most people keep quiet after that. They're a little ashamed if they have a sense of shame. He does not. But if he's a cruel guy. He's a cruel guy, and he likes to grind her in the ground, just like he's trying to do Nikki Haley right now. He's having a tougher time with Joe Biden, I can tell you that. But anyway, the idea is, how much more money will shut the guy up? And by shut him up, I don't mean his discussing any legitimate issues in his race, that kind of thing, but just cruelly trying to grind a woman into the ground whom he raped. And I, you know, do not want to get into all the details again, but the judge clarified this one. In the first trial, there were several jury questions. One of them is, did he sexually abuse her? They said yes. Did he rape her? They say no. Rape is a common law term for penetration of an unwilling woman in the vagina with any object, not just your penis. And so here, the judge made it very clear that he had penetrated her. He threw her up against the wall. No one was around. She was frightened, put his hand under her skirt, in her pants, and used his fingers to penetrate her. That is rape. The fact that the jury didn't respond on that one is simply because the average person may have a misconception about what it is. In any event, this was a clown show of a trial. Trump whispered under his breath denial, saying he never knew her and all this kind of stuff, which is a direct contradiction, a direct disobedience to the judge's order. The judge said, yeah, you can testify, but you can't deny you did it. You can't put that into issue. You don't have to say you did do it. You just can't talk about that because the jury has already decided. The jury's already decided that you did do it. That's number one. Number two, you can't say anything in front of the jury that they can hear unless it's from the witness stand. And he violated all of that. He's a sneaky guy, frankly, and he sneakily whispered under his breath, you know, I don't know it. I don't know her, never saw her, that kind of thing. The judge also got in a tussle with the lawyer, Selena Haba. Here's an issue that a lot of lawyers face, and the only way, in my judgment, that an ethical lawyer can resolve it is to, you know, be your own person. But in this one, Alina Haba tries to be a mini Trump. She tries to suck up to Trump, maybe because she wants to be paid. I don't know this guy. I mean, most lawyers would get a retainer out of the guy, but in any event, he stiffed a lot of people, is what I'm saying. But in any event, Alina Haba would argue with the judge. The judge said, you're not arguing with me, and you're not doing your client a service if you get on the judge's bad side gratuitously. Sometimes, I mean, you have to represent your client. Judge may not like your client, and he may not therefore like you, and there's nothing you can do about that. But you don't have to be disrespectful, and you have to violate his orders. Well, anyway, Trump testified for what, about 3 minutes, 5 minutes max? He asked Haba, the judge did, what is he going to say? She said he's going to stand by his deposition. He gets on the stand. He lies immediately and busts the order and says he didn't do it. The judge strikes the testimony The only thing he was permitted to say was he stands by a deposition, and then he gets off the stand, goes out, kind of yelling, this isn't America, this isn't America. Here's the deal. In the closing arguments, you sit there. He didn't have to come to the closing argument. He didn't have to come at all, actually. He didn't come to the first trial, but closing arguments you don't have to come to. But if you do come to them, you're supposed to sit there silently, have respect for the courtroom. The jury is listening intently to the closing arguments. This clown Trump, crooked Donald Trump, gets up in the middle of E. Jean Carroll's lawyer's oral argument and walks out. And one of his lawyers also walks out after he does. Now, in a normal trial, if one lawyer disrespects the other one in the courtroom decorum by doing that, they'd be sanctioned. I do not know what Judge Kaplan is going to do in this case. But doing that in front of a jury in oral argument, I think, is a bad tactic. In law, it can be a good tactic in politics. And let me tell you what I mean by that. I've been involved in a lot of campaigns, been involved in a lot of presidential campaigns in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And it's not uncommon, and I saw this in several Democratic debates, where you're for one party, you're for one candidate, and you and a bunch of your people show up and you sit right in front of the stage. Your candidate speaks, you jump up, you know, especially the kids, they cheer, they yell and all that. When the other candidate that yours is running against gets up to speak, it's not uncommon for everybody to get up and leave, leaving a big chunky hole right in the crowd. Now, I don't like to do that. I've never done that, but people do it, and they think that somehow throws the other candidate off, demoralizes them, whatever. Trump is a political animal, a sneaky political animal. That's all he is. And I think he thought that was a good idea in this case. That's a terrible idea in front of a jury. The juries take their duties very seriously. The juries know that they're the center of attention. Ultimately, they're going to make the decision. They actually do listen very carefully. Some courts will let them take notes. Some judges won't let them take notes. But if they let them take notes, some people are writing furiously. They're studying the witnesses. And for one of the lawyers to do something immature and disruptive really doesn't sit well with them. As I say, Donald Trump didn't have to show up. He'd given his testimony. It was bad testimony. He hurt himself doing it. But if he hadn't shown up, it'd be very, very common. It'd be not remarked on at all. But when you show up, and the minute the other side gives their summation, you get up and walk out, You went there for a show. This is nothing more than bad political theater. And then when your lawyer walks out, and I think it was one of the other lawyers, so Alina Habba stays, these are very poor impression. I do not know what's going to happen in this case. The question's been asked, is there going to be a verdict today? Well, nobody in that jury wants to sit all weekend worrying about this and come back Monday. On the other hand, if you're talking about money damages, they're not just going to, off the top of their head, shout out a number and walk back into the courtroom. On the other hand, right now, it is 2:15 p.m. here in Milwaukee. It's 3:15 p.m. in New York. They could easily deliberate a few more hours. When 5:30 comes along, judge will send them a note. They'll say, are you close to a verdict? Do you want to stay into the evening? I'll have dinner brought in. Or do you want to come back on Monday? And they'll let them know. If they say they can come to a verdict today, he will let them stay. It's up to him, but most judges will let them stay. If they go, we're still far apart, blah, blah, blah. Okay, come back Monday. The issues in this case that would keep them apart would be amount of money. He did it a second time. She's already gotten $5 million. How much more should she get? Versus the other thing is the real reason for this lawsuit, the real reason to stop him is to stop the threats, the death threats, the insults to her, the public insults. She's kind of afraid to go out in public. You know, she's kind of a walking cadaver of a reputation because, frankly, and this is sad, very sad, and it's also very true. When women are victimized sexually like that, it hurts their reputation, even though they did nothing wrong. And she didn't deserve it. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. People are saying, well, maybe it's going to be a real monster verdict. I don't know. I mean, there's a real monster verdict in the Ruby Freeman Shea Moss case, but in that one, it was so brutal what Giuliani did. They had to sell their house and move, and they had their business destroyed, and she's even afraid to go out to the store. There's a racial component to it where they were victimized by a guy who had a lot of power over them in a sense. And it was so obviously fraudulent. You know, they're doing their jobs, and he's claiming that these are false ballots and destroyed their lives. I can see that here after one trial, and now it's a second trial. I don't know. It could go very big. It could go a smaller number, but still a significant number. I absolutely don't know. But we'll see. There's a lot more. There's a lot more going on here. Let me say a couple of things. And this is too much. Lauren Boebert, out in Colorado, had her first debate. There were 9 candidates. Somebody said, if you've been arrested, raise your hand. 6 of the 9, 6, raised their hands, including Boebert and including the minority leader of the assembly, a Republican. And you know what they did? They high-fived each other. I mean, what is it with that party? What is it with that party? They exult over breaking the law. They exult over arrests. This is pathetic. What a pathetic crowd. What a pathetic group of people. Okay, we're stepping away. We're coming back. The Georgia Senate passes some legislation to target Fannie Willis. This is serious, and I'm going to explain the background of it coming back.
Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Your lines are open, 844-967-2789. Going to Georgia. Well, the Georgia Senate just passed you call it a resolution. It's not subject to veto by Brian Kemp it's not a normal piece of legislation, but in the Senate, it creates a committee with subpoena power. And that committee is charged with investigating Fannie Willis. Now, there's been a lot of sentiment in the Republican Party there to fire her as DA because she has a lot of guts and she's a very great prosecutor, frankly. And that's a way to protect Donald Trump. But obviously, the Democrats oppose that, independents oppose it, and moderate Republicans oppose it for a couple of reasons. One of them is there are some of them that do believe in democracy, not many, but the rest of them, I think, realize how that would look if somebody in the majority party, which in some respects is harvested through gerrymander, removes a prosecutor who's prosecuting Donald Trump, and especially after she's gotten guilty pleas and cooperation pleas from a number of defendants, and a Georgia judge has denied the motions to dismiss or the remaining defendants. That looks so Putin-esque. That's pure Moscow Russia. And they realize that, and so they opposed it. Now, one of Trump's co-defendants, and this was all cooked up in the parking lot. They used an unremarkable minor character who's a defendant to raise this issue of a relationship between Fannie Willis, and one of the special prosecutors that she hired. Now, the truth is, she's a single woman. He is going through a divorce and has been separated from his wife for a while, and they have the right to date, and that's their business. But obviously, you can't have that kind of relationship without people whispering about it or getting around. And when that came to the attention of the Trump people, they picked out the sort of lowest level type of guy who's a co-defendant. And then he brought a motion to dismiss based on that and to recuse her from the case, blah, blah, blah. Trump just jumped in on that, filed his own motion, you know, and, you know, looking real sorrowful. Oh, I just heard about this and as terrible as this guy is behind it. This guy's paying for it. Guy's a sneaky guy, very sneaky guy. Anyway, let me tell you the law on it. And let me tell you some thoughts about what she might want to consider doing. Now, the law on it, and by the way, this this resolution in the Senate to set up the subpoena power committee passed 30 to 19 on party lines, basically, 30 to 19. And the intent is they'll try to subpoena her, and they'll try to humiliate her sexually by asking about the relationship and pretending to go at it with kid gloves, but they won't go at it with kid gloves, just like they try to drag Bill Clinton through the mud. Here, if somebody on her team should say this: Fannie Willis is a single woman and has the right to date whoever she wants. Mr. Wade, I think his name is, the prosecutor, is one of the top prosecutors in Georgia. He's a former judge, by the way. And he's in a very, very large firm, well-regarded firm. And it's very common for DAs to hire prosecutors. She hired three prosecutors. Mr. Wade is the only African-American. There are two white prosecutors, but that doesn't really mean anything. They're all top-notch. They're all working for $250 an hour. Now, you may think that that's a lot of money, and it is, obviously. Don't get me wrong with the average person. But for lawyers, that's very low. It's called, you've heard of pro bono, where you do it for free. This is known as low bono. In other words, it's a very small fraction of hourly rates, but you do it as a public service. Some law firms, big white-collar crime firms in New York, are charging $1,200, $1,500 an hour. I think that's outrageous, but that's what they do. But a large, good firm in Georgia would easily charge between $600 and $900 an hour. To do it for $250 an hour, every hourly component has a layer of just recovering your operating costs of your firm. Secretary salaries, computers, rent, entertainment of clients, all of that stuff. So there's not a lot, if any, profit baked into this hourly rate. And anyway, that's what Fannie Willis was authorized to do, and she did. Now, his total fee has come so far to something a little over 600 grand at 250 an hour. He's worked very hard. And you know something? Those special prosecutors have hit it out of the park. They've gotten plea agreements and cooperation agreements, shutting down Chesbro, Sidney Powell, and some of the others. They've also beaten back motions to dismiss. Very common in a criminal case, you almost always file a motion to dismiss, and that's a hazard for prosecutors. If that's granted, you're out of court. It requires not only good research, but it requires good advocacy. It requires imagination, good oral argument. So, should she have been dating this guy? That's entirely up to her. It's not for me to say, not for you to say either. The optics of it right now, the appearance of it, should she consider saying, okay, I'm going to step back from the case. I'm not going to ask Mr. Wade to step back from the case. And my deputy will be the office manager in charge of the case, but these special prosecutors will be the ones that do it. Should Mr. Wade step back from the case as well? All of that is not required, in my view. What the state Senate down there is doing, and the protocol for this investigation, is to see if there's an improper use of tax money. That's the fig leaf that they're using. What do you mean tax money? these fees are being paid by taxpayers out of an account when there's a prosecution that's very complex and the DA is authorized to hire special prosecutors with special expertise. Sure. But once they get their fee, their low bono fee, how they spend it is their business. This guy didn't get the whole thing. That goes to his law firm, and he gets a salary or sometimes what they'll say a draw or a percentage at the end of the year. I have no idea what their arrangement is, and I have no interest in their arrangement. So if what you're saying is that he or she out of their salaries are paying for a plane ticket or they're going away for a weekend, good for them. That's their business. But because this is being raised to a political level, the question immediately arises, well, as a practical matter to avoid any appearance, there's no conflict of interest. If she were dating the defense counsel, that would be a serious conflict of interest. If she were dating the judge, that would be a serious conflict of interest. To debate a fellow lawyer on her side happens all the time. In law firms all around the country, people meet their spouses, they get involved in a trial, they're on the same side, and they meet and they fall in love. So that's what you have. Keep a sharp eye out for Georgia. They're up to some skullduggery down there. The Republican Party is up to skullduggery. They have been right from the get-go in every election they've been involved in. So this is something to keep in mind. Coming up, a lot of news, a lot of weather, and there's now a question, and I'll explain why. Is Kyrsten Sinema really running for re-election in Arizona, or did Ruben Gallego just hit a home run? Coming up, very interesting. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Go right to the lines. Mark from the SAC, my friend. Thanks for calling. Mark, what's in your mind today?
Yeah, it's interesting with the thing on against Fannie Willis. I don't know how many of those legislatures that voted against Fannie Willis actually are having an affair with the person in their office or getting something on the side. And see nothing wrong with that. Some of these family values Republicans. And you mentioned the case out in Denver there where they're giving high fives, you know, Lord, all hands on crotch Boebert. it is just sad that, you know, we see this kind of thing going on. But I mean that they talk about, you know, law and order, but they really have no, it's all hands for Trump right now. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, we're going to find out how big they're going to fine him for defaming the woman he raped. But he's still got his family values defenders out there and people that are going to vote for Donald Trump in spite of the fact what they know he has done. You know, that I wonder how many of these guys that would offer up their own children for Donald Trump to sexually molest. I mean, it's at that point right now that Donald Trump is their Lord Emperor, and that is something that, you know, they're willing to make those sacrifices for a guy that they've replaced, you know, Jesus in their pantheon. Disturbing.
Right. I think it's true. And it's certainly true this part of it is true. In Georgia, this is being done to protect Trump. In other words, everybody in the bar knows that a consensual relationship with someone, and when you're on the same side of the lawsuit, I'm not saying with the judge or with the opposing counsel, but the same side of the lawsuit is absolutely unremarkable and happens all the time. It isn't even so much that he's a special prosecutor she hired along with two others for the same fee, the low bono fee. It's really that this is a famous case. And, you know, of all the cases in the country to have that, what he's trying to do is to slow down and derail every criminal case against him till after November. And in Mar-a-Lago, he has one of his own lawyers as the judge. Her name is Eileen Mercedes Cannon, and she is doing everything. You'll bring a routine motion or you ask for permission to do something and she'll take a month. And she's deliberately extending it to get it beyond November. She never should have, she had no experience. She'd had maybe two cases on her own, no big cases. You know, you wouldn't hire a plumber or an electrician or a doctor with that little experience to do anything. And here she's because the Republicans put her through. Now, with Tanya Chutkan, you have Trump using delay, 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 appeal, 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 appeal immunity, do this, do that. And there's some, among experts, there's some discussion that maybe this appeals court will say, no, he doesn't have total immunity, but there's this kind of immunity. So it'll go down to Tanya Chutkan. She will apply it faithfully as told. He'll appeal that again. You see what I mean? There'll be serial appeals, 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 appeals. And at some point, what if the trial's in September? What if it's the week before November? I mean, this is partly because Garland sat on his hands for a long time in appointing Jack Smith. But that's water over the bridge. Nothing we can do, or water over the dam, I said. Water over the dam. Nothing we can do about it. At least it got done, and we'll see. Then there's Alvin Boggs, the guy in New York. That's, you know, that's a criminal case about the Stormy Daniels settlement, but that doesn't excite everybody's attention as much as the others because it was his own money, even though he concealed it and didn't report it as he should have. And then, you know, you have the documents, and then you have Fannie Willis. So if he can derail Fannie Willis, and he already has a skilled Trump operative as the judge in Eileen Mercedes Cannon, and he can keep appealing Tanya Chutkan. And then the thing in New York, who knows? He is simply trying to get past Super Tuesday, where presumably he'll get a lot more delegates, past at some point when it's impossible for Nikki Haley to do anything, her deciding, well, I'm not going to stay the course because my donors aren't going to pay. And then there's the Milwaukee convention, our convention, for Pete's sake, in Milwaukee in July. And at what point does a trial start to look a little different, look like something that's out of context, that maybe is retaliatory? That's the problem. These trials should have been a year ago. But that's what's going on right now. And Mark from the SAC is exactly right. Well, let's go to Arizona. Like Arizona? Go to Arizona. Kyrsten Sinema. We have Ruben Gallego as the presumptive Democratic nominee because he's a congressman. He's a Marine, a combat Marine. He's a heck of a guy, by the way. I think one of his folks is from Venezuela, the other from Mexico. He was born in the United States, but he's a top-notch guy, top-notch Marine. We need him in the Senate. Then you have Kyrsten Sinema, who is a pain in the neck. Kyrsten Sinema votes with us, but she's an independent. She wouldn't vote for the Voting Rights Act. She would not vote on Biden's tax bill to start taxing hedge fund managers to, as income instead of capital gains. They don't pay income tax. They pay half of it because of a trick. They had their income designated as carried interest. It's all a lie. But she gets a lot of her money from them, so she wouldn't vote for that. And she routinely is a thorn in Biden's side and Chuck Schumer's side. But I suppose it's better than her being a Republican because she at least votes for the majority leader as a Democrat. And the third one is Carrie Lake. It's an important Senate seat. We can win it. Carrie, you know, we won the governorship. We won Secretary of State. We won Attorney General. Carrie Lake, there's a buildup on the story that I talked about yesterday. There was a tape recorded conversation she had with the GOP chairman down there in which he offered her any amount she wanted, get out of politics for 2 years, get out of the race, saying there's some very powerful people want you out of the race. Turns out that she was behind the taping of it. That was planned by her and the Trump people. And not only that, when she then demanded to get a headline that the chairman, a guy named Jeff DeWitt, quit as chairman, he said a shockingly candid thing. I've never heard a guy say something like this. He goes, yeah, I am getting out because I had a lot of other conversations with her that were really bad, and it turns out she taped those and threatened to expose those too. That's almost quote unquote. I mean, that is the substance of what he said. Now, I think that the Trump people and Carrie Lake think that therefore everybody will go, oh, Carrie Lake is a tough cookie. She's good because these powerful people were obviously Democrats trying to get her. When I read this story, with all the nuance in the world, I assumed the powerful person was Trump. Yeah, he does want her out of the race because she's a disaster. And Moscow Mitch himself said the last time around about her, and remember the Wizard of Oz, Dr. Oz, the Turkish guy running in Pennsylvania who served in the Turkish army, votes in Turkey, is a friend of Erdogan over there, and yet because he was born in the United States, he's running for the Senate from Pennsylvania where he never lived. A clown. Carrie Lake's a clown. There are several other clowns. And Moscow Mitch said, you know, we could take back the Senate, but you got to have a candidate. And these people are not looked on as candidates. Well, they still aren't. So I think most people, certainly I, when I was looking at this, said, yeah, there are powerful people that want her out. Moscow Mitch wants her out. Trump, if he has a brain in his head, wants her out. And so there you have it. I think it's flashed back on him. It's just a tawdry, weird thing to have a taped conversation with your own party chairman, which he offers you a lot of money not to run, and you don't, you know, you don't say, I resent that. I'm going to call the police, instead of, you know, kind of luring him on. You know, she's kind of a provocative sort. In any event, that's what you got. Now, Kyrsten Sinema. If Kyrsten Sinema sticks it out, she'll take votes away from Ruben Gallego because she, you know, was the Democrat. Here's a odd fact. She has till April 4th to file 42,303 signatures. Wisconsin, you have to file 1,000 statewide. Maybe you file two, or maybe it's two now and you file four. Down there, 42,303 signatures. And you first, before you can circulate them, have to file what's called the statement of intent to run. As of yesterday, Kyrsten Sinema has not filed the statement of intent to run. She's talked about it. She's sniffed around, but she hasn't filed it. Now, she still can. The deadline for filing these signatures is April 4, so she has a little over 2 months. But she could have filed this a long time ago. And if you're collecting 42,303 signatures, and you know they'll be scrutinized by the other side, there'll be some bad signatures, fraudulent signatures, because some circulators will get lazy and tired at the end of the day and just write something in. But the longer she goes, there's a question in everybody's mind, what is her intent? I suspect that what's happened is that in her internal polling, now she has name recognition, far more name recognition than Ruben Gallego because he's a congressman. He represents 700,000 people. She represents the whole state. And she probably has more than Carrie Lake. But it may be that there's a softness in her internal polling. She'll know from past experience where her strongest supporters are, what counties and all that. And if she's looking weak and she doesn't want to run as an independent and lose, she may not run at all. And the other thing to remember is running as an independent is very hard. Bernie Sanders did it. Angus King of Maine did it. Those are very independent kind of states. But down in Arizona, there are going to be a lot of people that will only vote for a Republican, and a lot of people will only vote for a Democrat. They don't like the idea of an independent. For her to get over a third of the, you know, let's say it splits 34, 33, 33, and I don't think it will, but she has to get at least in the 30s, probably in the 40s, to have a shot. To get Arizona, people in Arizona to vote independent, turn their backs on the Republican Democratic parties. That's not going to be an easy task. The Republicans can see through her because she's voting for Schumer as majority leader to organize the Senate. And the Democrats are going to see through her. Ruben Gallego is a combat Marine and a good guy with a good reputation. And she has stabbed Schumer and Biden several times on voting rights. I mean, the Voting Rights Act, we could have gotten rid of, absolutely gotten rid of gerrymandering. She deliberately didn't do it. She was bad on pharmaceutical votes because, you know, she didn't want to lower costs because she gets money from the pharmaceutical industry. A lot of people are fed up with her. So she's not going to get Republican votes and not a ton of Democratic votes. This is a long prediction, and it's not solid at all. And she could this afternoon file a statement of intent and send her troops out this weekend and start collecting 42,000 signatures. But keep an eye on this. If this limps along week by week, suddenly it's March 1st and she hasn't filed a statement of intent and she still has to collect 42,000 signatures and change, that's a different story. So in any event, people who are close to it on the ground out there are beginning to think, well, maybe there's some hope she doesn't run. If she does not run, and it's Ruben Gallego against Kerry Lake, I mean, Kerry Lake is flat out bat feathers crazy. I mean, she's not a normal Republican by any means. She gushes over Trump that he is BD, big D energy, D being a word that rhymes with stick, and she fawns over the guy. I mean, it's really sad, and she's irrational and has no experience. She was the anchor of a TV station in Phoenix, Arizona. And that was it. That was flat out it. Okay. Coming up, step away for a minute, but coming up, Matt Gaetz unwisely told some people why he really deposed Kevin McCarthy. And it's not a pretty picture. Coming up.
And I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky. And the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river. And I'm gonna sit right here until I die.
Welcome back to Matchland Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, a very unwise thing for Matt Gaetz that he confided in a friend of his. And let's review the bidding on this one. Let's go back in time. Remember, he's the one who orchestrated the removal of Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy went something like 15 ballots. Republicans couldn't get their act together. They still can't. And after him, they couldn't with Emmer and Scalise and Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan. And they finally found this character, Mike Johnson, who's bad news. But basically, they can't even organize their own party. They can't stand themselves. Well, in this particular case, Matt Gaetz's party line had been, well, I decided to go against Kevin McCarthy because we made him agree that a single member could declare the chair vacant and there had to be a vote again of everybody in the House. And the Dems are all going to vote for Hakeem Jeffries. That's 213 votes. So our guy needs, back then it was 218. Now it's 217 because Santos's seat is unfilled. And also because a guy in Ohio, Republican, stepped down because simply he was selected as the president of a small college in Ohio. Okay, so now it's 217, maybe 216. But the Freedom Caucus has probably 80 or 90 or 100 members. Most of them are fake. You know, they're doing it to ward off primaries, but about 30 of them are hardcore. 30 of them are hardcore fascist types. Gaetz is the one that triggered it. So he said, well, you know, we have our principles. We have conservative principles. McCarthy wasn't conservative enough, which is all bull. I mean, McCarthy was not only was he conservative, but he was sort of anti-democracy. He voted not to certify Joe Biden. He went and sucked up to Donald Trump, gave a great speech right after January 6th. But then he flies down and kneels down and kisses the ring of Donald Trump. So I was always a little skeptical of Matt Gaetz's statement because it's not just that he was like a conservative Republican like Liz Cheney. He was a conservative Republican with no character whatsoever who destroyed our democracy. which is exactly what Matt Gaetz says. So, you know, you can say, yeah, there was the continuing resolution for a couple of months, but, you know, what's the guy going to do? He has to fund the government. Well, come to find out, Matt Gaetz told a friend, and he told a friend, and he told a friend, and it got out, that the reason he stuck a knife in Kevin McCarthy was because Kevin McCarthy ignited the ethics investigation into him based on the allegations of trafficking in Florida. Apparently Gaetz, you know, met with McCarthy and a lot of other people and begged them, you know, don't do the ethics investigation. And McCarthy did. And I'm not sure why, because McCarthy doesn't have integrity. He didn't do it for that reason. But he doesn't like Gaetz. Gaetz is brash, may have shot his mouth off to McCarthy early and insulted him. And I've always been puzzled why the federal prosecution for trafficking didn't go forward, because the wingman, Gaetz's wingman, pled guilty. And he is, I guess the case is still open. I haven't seen if he was sentenced or not, but, you know, he did something that was trafficking, and he and Gaetz hung out together. Well, come to find out, the latest development in that is that the committee has gotten new witnesses, and apparently there's some speculation that they may have subpoenaed the underage girl, who's now a woman. I think she was 17 at the time. And if she goes in and gives a deposition, I don't know if she talked to the prosecutors at all in Florida, but at some point the statute of limitations for most federal felonies is 5 years. In Wisconsin, it's 6 years for a felony. And that's it, except that it can be told for certain reasons. And I don't want to get into all the exceptions and the details. But Matt Gaetz has been walking on eggshells for a while. Remember, he initially shut his mouth off, and his lawyer told him to shut up. And then he was very silent. And when the feds down in Florida said, we're not going to go after him, then suddenly he chirped up, and you could hear him croaking in the swamp. Well, Matt Gaetz was apparently enraged at McCarthy and swore to get him. And McCarthy, when he was deposed, when he could not stay on as speaker, was very angry. One of the guys that had knifed him was a guy from Tennessee who had been his strong supporter. And McCarthy elbowed him in the kidneys as he walked down the hall. Elbowed him right flat in the kidneys. What kind of party is this? They high-five each other when 6 out of 9 candidates raise their hand to say they've been arrested, like it's a badge of honor or something. A couple were DUIs, but not all of them were DUIs. And that's no good either. But with McCarthy, his hatred of Gaetz is so intense. The things he said afterwards about Gaetz personally and about his integrity and morality were extraordinary. And in addition, Gaetz got up during one of the sessions, is probably for Emmer, not Scalise. It's probably Emmer or for Gymnasium, Jim G.O.M. Jordan, in the Republican caucus to talk. And the minute he got up, a number of congressmen said, shut up, sit down. You know how rare that is? They all have this courtesy. You'd think that they were like 18th century aristocrats or something. My lord, I take exception, my lord, to the adjective. You know, that's the kind of stuff they normally say. They don't say shut up and elbow guy in the kidneys. I mean, this is bad. They don't like each other. They know they're crooks and thieves, by and large, crooks and thieves. Many of them have larcenous tendencies. Many of them have fascist tendencies. And they're all submissive. You saw what Tim Scott, for Pete's sake, the most degrading, sad thing I've ever seen in politics was when he's behind Trump after Haley had appointed him to the Senate. This guy was a non-entity. He was never going anywhere. Suddenly he's in the Senate. And he stabs Haley and he endorses Trump. Trump turns to him to humiliate him. Trump goes, you must really hate Nikki Haley. She appointed you. And instead of slugging Trump or saying the hell with you and walking off the stage, he comes around and gives him this servile, submissive grin and says, I love you. Actually, the Democrats need an ad where Trump is there saying that to Putin after Putin insults him in the back for something very silly. Really must hate America. Okay, we're coming to a lot of news. We're coming to a lot of weather. And we're also coming to the Eighth Amendment, cruel and inhuman punishment. They just killed the guy in Alabama, and I think it was wrong. We're going to talk about. I see you on the lines. Don't hang up. I'll get back to you right after the lines. On the lines. Coming up.
I'm all shook up.